Hi, everybody. Would you pray silently with me for a minute for my voice? Thank you. My name's Dot Talley, and I'm an alcoholic. The reason I had to do that, the Thursday night before I came, I couldn't even talk. But I came anyway. And I think what kind of sustains me through just about everything that happens to me today is praying and having a pretty decent attitude. I don't think I have no bad times no more. I have bad moments. I don't have no bad days. No bad days, never. And I think that's because I found out one of the things I love most in life is being depressed. I absolutely love being depressed. And I didn't know that for a lot of years. Well, I never knew it before I came in the program. And I didn't find it out right away when I came in. But once I got the message of why I was so depressed so often, I start tripping back on my life. And sometimes I would have like planned depression. Sometimes I would have impromptu depressions. And I remember one time I got depressed and I hadn't planned that. And it was like an 8-day depression. And what happened was, about the third or fourth day, I ran out of cigarettes, and around the fifth or sixth day, I ran out of food, and I was eating like oatmeal, milk, and sugar, and then oatmeal and milk, and then just oatmeal. But you see, now there was a grocery store across the street from my house, but I couldn't put my clothes on and go to the store and buy food and cigarettes, because when you're being depressed, you can't do that. You got to hang on in there and stay depressed, you know. And I had my phone wrapped up in a Turkish towel and stuck down in a dirty clothes hamper, you know, because I didn't want no involvement with other people, you know. I had to just, you know, martyr and all like that, you know, so I know how to be depressed. And the reason I ain't depressed no more is because I learned to tell the truth about depression, which is I love it. And I don't get depressed no more because I tell the truth about that. You know, I cannot afford to play into that kind of stuff today. So I knew that even though I did not physically feel well when I got on the plane, I knew I had the main ingredient in my head and in my heart, which is a good attitude. You know, when I started coming down here, I learned how to party since I've been in this program. And it used to be that I used to be the life of the party when I was drinking. Then when I came to the program, I presented my body, see, and everything else was on you guys. You know, like I wanted you to turn me on, you know, like here I am, you know, what's going on? I don't do that no more. See, I don't wait for you to strike the bell for me to dance. I dance when I feel like it. Because everybody don't feel the same way at the same time, okay? Now, I didn't get here till I was 47, and I ain't got time to be sad. Now, let me tell you something. I don't have no problem with nobody saying what they say. Everybody's entitled to their own opinion, okay? But now, in the foreword in the big book, it says, we the first 100 men and women who have recovered from alcoholism. Now, I ain't got no argument. Y'all can recover as long as you want to. I am recovered. Me. Because I refuse to be 90 and 100 years old coming to AA recovering. I ain't going to do it. See, it took me too long to get here. So I just keep it simple. The big book told me I was recovered, so I'm recovered. Okay? When I was a little girl, I was very confused, and it was kind of like when you get born, everybody gets a book, and everybody had a book, and I had a book, but I opened up the book, and what I was reading ain't what she was reading, and I didn't know what page you was on, you know, and I kept asking, and how to do it, how to do this thing called living, how to do life, and I never learned how to do life until I got here. See, all my life I had it confused. What I thought was excitement was confusion. And I didn't know that. I did not know that I lived totally confused until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. But you can't get no answers if you ain't got no questions, and I didn't have no questions. Yeah, I thought, well, you got to be somebody. So it was like I had all kinds of strikes against me. Number one, I was poor. Now, when I look back on that today, I know what I had was poverty of spirit. See, it had nothing to do with my family because I have never been hungry. I've never been outdoors or without shoes coming up in my life. And I, too, came up in the 30s. But I had poverty of spirit. Number two, I was black. Now, y'all know black just got to be beautiful here in these recent years. You know, they start, you know, when you get sick that, you know, black's beautiful. Black wasn't always beautiful. It wasn't beautiful when I was little. And number three, I felt dumb. I felt like everybody knew something but me. Everybody knew how to do life, and I didn't know how to do it, you know? And so I decided I would watch and see what everybody else did. Now, there's a few people, not many, but a few people in here over 40, so the only the ones over 40 will know what a red light district is. And that's where I was raised up. And I loved it. I didn't know it was the wrong side of the tracks. I thought it was the only side of the tracks. And there were people like my family that worked and had babies and, you know, raised families and stuff. And then there were the other people. There were people that had the cat houses, the after-hour joints and the gambling joints. And those are the people that I was drawn to. And the reason I was drawn to them is because they laughed a lot, they had money jingling in their pockets, and they did not seem to be tired. I would look at people like my mother and the neighbors right around next door and everything, and they looked tired. And they had all these babies, and so I thought, well, Dot, what you need to do is get smart. Don't get married. Don't have no babies, and you won't get tired. So by the ripe old age of 15, I was married, I had a baby, and I was tired. And you know, I've been tired ever since. But I drank when I was 13. And I didn't like it much. It's a funny thing about that alcohol. Every time I drank and took no other chemical, I got drunk. Every time. It was very difficult for me to know when I came into AA that I'm an alcoholic because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. And it took me about a year, and I would say, well, Dot, you sit up and you separate yourself from the rest of the people. When did you drink? When you was happy? Yeah. Sad? Yeah. Bored? Yeah. The sun come up? Yeah. And I thought, maybe I'll think about that. Maybe I am an alcoholic. Because, you see, I'm also dual addicted. And it blew me away when I found out I was an alcoholic before I took any other chemical. But I did drink when I was 13 and got very drunk and I got very sick. And I decided a little later, I was still about 13, well, if I smoke this reefer, I can drink it, I won't get drunk. It was always important for me to drink, no matter what other chemical I took. And then I started dibbling and dabbling with pills and then cocaine and then heroin through the years. And you know, it's a funny thing about chemicals. I didn't like none of them initially when I first used them. But if you want to get good at something, you know what you do? Practice. That's all you got to do. Practice. You can get good at anything. I do that in the program today. See, because I did not like sticking out my hand to people when I came here. I did not like obeying. I ain't never wanted to obey nobody. But I know this. My life depends on me being obedient. It ain't got nothing to do with whether I like it or not. I cannot tell you that I'm healthy enough to continuously want to obey today. I know I better. That's why I'm here. That's why I stay. When I was in my late teens, I went to the penitentiary for the first time. And over the next 20 years of my life, I returned to the penitentiary 5 more times. Very simply because I didn't learn on the first time. That's why I kept going. They said, Dot, we got a board to fit your rump any way you turn it. I said, no, you don't. They said, yeah, I do, and they did. And they said, you can't wear us out, but we can wear you out. I said, no, you can't. And they did. They wore me out. And, you know, when I think back on that, all the women that came in and left out and didn't come back no more are women that shared. See, I couldn't share nothing. I just absolutely couldn't. I had a daughter, and I had her picture in the top dresser drawer, but I couldn't talk about her. I could not discuss anything about me. And they would cry, and they would read their letters and share about how they missed their families. See, my letters that I wrote home, I could have Xeroxed them. I'm okay, you're okay, see you when I can. I didn't get into that stuff. I was hurt too bad and too deep. I felt like a failure down inside, and I just could not talk to anybody in there. But the women that shared did not come back. I stacked up brick by brick, year after year, whether I was in a penitentiary, out of the penitentiary, and I had a wall around my emotions. My motto became, if you think it's bad today, wait till tomorrow. That was my motto. See, I didn't ask no quarter, and I didn't give none. I didn't expect nothing from no human being. I fought all my life not to be vulnerable, not to let you see me, not to let nobody know nothing about me, only to come to Alcoholics Anonymous years later and to find that the only way that I can get better is to take the tools of this program bit by bit and chip and chip and chip away at that granite that was inside me. It was like I had a hole in my soul. And no matter what I put in there, it never got filled up. I would say, I need to go to this city and I'll be all right. I need to get this amount of money and I'll be all right. I need to buy this car and I'll be all right. I need to do this or that and I'll be all right. And I was never all right. No matter what I ever had, even if it was good, it was like, but it won't last. Tomorrow it'll be gone. That's the way I lived my total life. I got a sign in my office. It's a picture of Freud that says, just because you're paranoid don't mean they ain't out to get you. And my sponsor gave me that, because I'm still paranoid. You know what I'm saying? I am. I'm still paranoid. And but that's okay. See, you cannot live your total life, and every time there's a knock on the door, you think the police is going to kick it in. You can't live like that year after year after year and come in this program and just get well overnight. Okay? It's like this guy, Johnny, from California, says that this woman said, I walked through the wonderful doors of Alcoholics Anonymous 12 wonderful years ago, and everything has been wonderful ever since. He says she's either nuts or she's taking something. And I agree. I agree with that. See, because everything has not been wonderful since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I wasn't wonderful. I ain't too wonderful today. See what I'm saying? But I have found out that if I stay away from a drink a day at a time, I can get all right. See, the last part of that 12th step, I mean the first step, talks about admitting that our lives are unmanageable. I have found out, and it saves my sanity today, I have found out that not only was my life unmanageable then, it's unmanageable now for me. But God can do it. He can do it. Ain't no question about it. Ain't no way, you know, they take talk about the, don't tell the new people about God. I ain't got nothing else to tell them. What else am I going to tell them about? You know what I mean? I don't know what else to tell them. See? And I don't go through this debate and stuff about is there a God, ain't there a God. I tell you one thing. If I get to the pearly gates, and you know how they say your life flashed before you, and I realize there ain't no God, guess what I'm going to say? Thank God I didn't know there wasn't no God. You know what I mean? Because in the first place, ain't no way I could have relieved that craving. Whether I was in the penitentiary or out of the penitentiary, I was getting loaded. I remember one time they had a riot in there, and I didn't even know they had no riot. You know, I didn't. And the warden said, well, I don't want to talk to everybody. Just get one spokesperson. And guess who they come and got? And then they had to tell me what the beef was and what all this stuff they wanted me to say to the warden. But the thing was, see, I wasn't interested in nothing like that. You know the reason they come and got me? They knew I didn't care. See, when you're sick like I was, you can fight everybody else's cause. But I felt like dirt. So anything that happened to me, I could not speak up for me, but I could speak up for you. I could take up your banner, your cause. All them nut houses I was in and out, guess what I did? Started riots. I would get the nuts together. You know what I mean? And I remember one time I wanted a light from a cigarette. And the girl said, well, you got to ask the lady. I said, don't they lie? Y'all have no cigarette. No matches. She said, no. And I got all the nuts together, ready to riot. Can you imagine? I'd have been the first nut to burn it down if they'd have allowed us to have matches. You know? I tell you, there's a green that they have in them nut houses. I call it nut house green. There ain't no other color green, no place else in the world but them nut houses. When you wake up in the air, and then I say, oh no, not again. Then I get ready to go to the door, and ain't no doorknob on your side. You're in trouble. You know, there was never no doorknob on my side. And it's so, see, here's the thing. When I say to you, I am sober by the grace of God, I know exactly what I'm talking about because I looked it up in the dictionary. Grace means unmerited favor. It means I can't buy it. I can't earn it. God loves me and he laid it on me. That's what it means. See? And it also means something else to me. See, all my life they kept telling me about being good. And I didn't want to be good. And I felt guilty because I didn't feel guilty because I enjoyed doing all the things they said good little girls don't do. Thank God I never got good. See, I'm happy today for one reason. I accept God's love for me and I don't get good. I know I can't win no brownie points with him. I can't win none. He loves me right now like I am today. He loved me when I didn't pray at all. He loved me when I defied him and fought him step by step. Okay? How much more would he love me when I try? Even though I fail, I try. You see, I don't want to get good because I found when I came to this program and I tried to get good, what happened to me is I developed a critical spirit because I could not live up to this pedestal that I had put Dot Tally on that she didn't belong on no how. I couldn't live up to it. And when I don't live up to it, I feel bad. I start to criticize me, but that ain't the way it comes out. You know how it comes out? I turn on you. I turn on you. So it ain't about me trying to get good. I don't want that. I want to be happy, see? And I found out a lot of folks don't want to be happy. They really don't. See, because what happens is God forgives us, and then we're so self-righteous, we can't forgive ourselves. And the truth of it is, we don't even know nothing to do bad enough, long enough that God can't forgive us. But we want to hold on to that old stuff. You know what I mean? Like, get rid of this, get rid of this, but don't get rid of that. I want to get rid of all of it. Because let me tell you something. When I come to this program, I had no idea what being sober meant. I didn't want to be bored. I didn't know that AA would be the greatest adventure of my life. See, people come and they say, if you don't get AA, AA will get you. Don't y'all believe that? It will not get you. You can come and sit in these chairs for 20 years and it won't get you. You got to change. See, this is not a program of self-improvement. It's a program of self-replacement. I needed to replace me. See, I didn't need to improve. You can find all the alcoholics and the dope fiends at the how-to shelf in the bookstore. We read all them how-to books. See what I mean? How to do this, how to do that, how to do that. We know all that stuff. But it's an intellectual trip. We can't get it out of our heads and into our lives. That's the problem. I needed to replace me. AA will not get you. You got to change. Now, you can come here and don't change if you want to. But my sponsor says that AA is like a smorgasbord. You can come and take a little crouton, or you can have a whole bottle of wax, and that's what I want. When she just got through reading about the promises, that's what I want. I want to know a new freedom. I ain't never been free. And I know today that with freedom comes discipline and responsibility, and I have never wanted to be disciplined. I have never wanted to be responsible to nothing and nobody. But if I want to be free, that's what I got to do. The bottom line there says we will suddenly realize that God's doing for us what we couldn't do for ourselves, and He can and He will. If we go another mile and go another mile and go another mile. You see, I never tried nothing because I did not want to fail. There's nobody that's an alcoholic that's sitting in this room that's a success today in sobriety that hasn't failed. There is no success without failure. It cannot be. You see, I tried to drink on Monday. It didn't work. I tried to change when I drank, what I drank, mixed them, unmixed them, drink on the weekend, change towns, change men, read intellectual books. It didn't work. I failed. Why do you think I'm succeeding today? Because I failed so much in the past. I got a history of failure. That's why I'm a success today. I know what don't work. It's just that simple. Right. Yeah, I see some folks in the program, they say they're happy, but I wonder, I say, now, if they're happy, wonder why they don't let their face know it. They're happy. You know? See, if you ain't happy, this for you, you know, AA is kind of like having sex. If you don't enjoy it, you ain't doing it right. You know? There's something wrong you're doing. Get with the program. This is all the stuff we need here. I need to change. I need to replace me. I need to start at, you know, there's a difference between fake it till you make it and acting as if. Now, I explain what I mean. See, I faked it so long, I don't like that. I don't like that expression, fake it till you make it. Acting as if means, give an example. If I want an apartment and I get down on my knees and pray tonight for God to help me find an apartment, when I go to the grocery store tomorrow, you know what I'm going to do? Pick up an empty box, take it home, so I'll have something to clean my junk drawer out with. See, that's acting as if. I ain't got the apartment, but it's on the way because he's going to answer the prayer. That's acting as if, and I like that. There's a lot of phrases we use, you know, like people say, how you doing? Hanging in there. See, now, it's all right for new people to hang in there. God knows it is. But if you ain't new, don't hang in there. Live. You know, when are we going to start to live? We just keep hanging in there. You know, I don't like that. You know, I'm very, very particular about what I say. See, I used to repeat everything. I used to be slick, you know. That's the only thing I learned in my neighborhood is how to be cool. We called it learning our ABCs, how to be cool. First dude I married so cool he went to bed with his shades on. You know, he was cool. And that's why I liked it. And that's all I learned was how to be cool. But see, I don't be cool no more. And you people used to say to me, Doc, how you doing? Guess what I'd say? The damn don't cry. And I was damning myself. I am particular about what comes out of my mouth today. See what I mean? Because life and death is in the tongue. And I try to speak life because I have had that misery. I don't want that misery no more. You know, I've had it. I gave myself a chore about 14 months ago. I decided to read the Bible from cover to cover. Fantastic book. And my youngest grandson's about 16, and his room is right next door to mine. And he would ask me in the morning, Grandma, why you be laughing so late at night? I be cracking up at the characters in the Bible. They are hilarious. And here's what I found out. You know, when I read the big book, I could identify with all the stories in the back. You know, now the same things didn't happen to me, the exact same things, but I could identify with the feelings. Same thing happened with the Bible when I read it. I was amazed, and it's as a result of being in this program, really. Because when I was a kid and used to read it, Those people were different than me. They were separate from me. Not today, because my understanding has changed. I look at them, I said, Lord, you picked the most unlikely folks to do your work. You know, see, he don't pick them. He'll use anybody. If you don't believe me, look at the person sitting next to you. He'll use anybody, you know. But I stopped complaining. Now, it took me a while, but I have learned to stop complaining. And the reason I did that is because I read about Moses, you know. Moses, and he didn't want to do it either. God called him. He was out in the wilderness. He was on the lamb. He had done somebody in Egypt, you know, killed somebody, and then was on the lamb and over there in Midian, I think, and tending the sheep, married, had a little boy and everything. Here come God. Want him to come and save the Israelites. He didn't want. He told, look, I stutter. I can't talk good. I don't want to go. God sent him anyway. He went and talked to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh finally turned the children of Israel loose, and they come through the Red Sea. And just like us frail human beings, they start through the wilderness. Now, they've been praying for 400 years to get free. They wasn't out in the wilderness 2 weeks before they start that complaining. Just like me, just like us. We had no cucumbers for 2 weeks. We should have stayed in Egypt. They go a little further. We had no meat. You know, y'all think that commercial, Where's the Beef, is new. It ain't new. It ain't new. They're saying that here. Where's the beef? You know, and complaining. God got tired. He got mad at them. He rained quail down on them for days, and some of them just ate themselves to death. Then they get a little further. Now, he had done promised them Jericho, right? He says, yours. I'm going to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. They get there. They sent out 12 spies. 10 came back. This is a negative committee report. They said, them people over there in Jericho, they're like giants and we're like grasshoppers. We can't take it. Why did we stay in Egypt? And two, Joshua and Caleb said, look, God gave it to us. It's already ours. Come on, we can get it. See, the negative committee, God got tired. He said, as you have murmured in my ear, so it will be unto you. He didn't let none of that generation. All of them died off, and their children, 40 years later, went into the promised land. And I closed the Bible, and I thought, you know what? I'm always murmuring. And see, because I've been God's ear daily up until I read that Bible. Because I didn't want to steal no more, you know, after I come to the program. And I said, now, Lord, you know I'm trying to be sober, and I'm trying to change, and I don't want to steal. But you got to do something. And I didn't know nothing about praying. I said, well, if I pray about money, maybe I better go play the number, you know. And I didn't know how he was going to bless me. So, because it took me a year to stop stealing when I came. And I tell you about that. You know, the third, you know what it says, the only requirement is desire to stop drinking. It didn't say stop stealing. So, but after I was sober about a year, I was talking to my sponsor. And I hadn't called myself hiding anything from her. Now, I had stopped going to the department stores taking things. But I would do things like maybe if I would go in the supermarket and they'd have this black pepper and it would be expensive. I'd say, people got to be crazy charging this money, and I'd take it. And or I'd see some Delmonico steaks and the price was up. I said, they got to be nuts. Let me take this steak. I was going to buy it, but since they charge so much, I'll just take it. And I thought I was better. I had to improve. And so I was talking to my sponsor, and she said, Dot, I pray to God for what I need. Therefore, I don't find it necessary to steal. And she got my attention. Because had she said, we in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous don't do so-and-so and so, I would have known that was a lie. See what I mean? We don't drink in AA. Okay? But she got my attention because she let me know that she relies on God for what she needs. I've learned an awful lot since I've been coming to this program. And what I have learned mainly is that if it's something that ain't right, then I gotta change it. I gotta change it for me. I cannot come here and expect you people to make me happy. The main ingredient I need is a decent attitude. Because, like I was telling you about this praying, I had been bending God's ear. Tell him, look, I don't want to steal. Now, I had had a bar business when I come in the program and I sold that. I said, now, you got to send me a man, and not only send me a man, send me one with some money. And he got me a job. And so I had been telling him about this job. I was 50 when I went to work. Lord knows I never expected to go to work. I just thought that would never happen to me. And he got me a job. Now, as I look back on that, that is the best thing that could have ever happened to me. Because let me tell you something. I was not emotionally prepared for no man. Number one, God ain't made the man I want no how. That's the first thing. See, because I want him to anticipate my thoughts even before I think it. Now, and if there was, there ain't no man like that. But even if there was, what would he want with me? With all my insecurities and frailties and all, what would he want with me? The guy would be perfect, so what would he want with my imperfections? You see what I'm saying? But that was the best thing that ever happened to me, because it showed and it opened the doors and it forced me to deal with people, and I never have wanted to deal. It has forced me to rely on him day by day by day. It's forced me to let you see me, and I never wanted anybody to see me. I've learned an awful lot about me since coming in this program, and I have learned that nothing and no one can really make me happy. I'll explain what I mean to you. Money can't make me happy. It can enhance my happiness. A man can't make me happy. He can enhance my happiness. My happiness depends upon my relationship with God, period. And I need to keep everything in the proper perspective. Him first, me next, and whomever else next. Because if I get it screwed up and get it out of line, it ain't gonna work. Because if I'm not all right with God, I'm not gonna be all right with me. And if I ain't all right with me, I can't be all right with you. I just can't be. And I've heard it for years and years, and I did not understand that happiness was a decision. I've heard that, and it didn't mean nothing. But you know what's true? When I wake up in the morning and my shades are drawn, I thank God for the beautiful day. And I don't even know what's going on outside. I ain't even open up the drapes. Don't make no difference what's going on out there. I thank him for the beautiful day. And see, when I go through my little ritual in the morning and go to work, I remember one time this girl, Carol, she was a secretary. We'd meet on the parking lot. And I was wondering why every morning I'd meet Carol, I was feeling all right, and I'd go into work, and here we drag into work. And I started thinking, why am I so drug out, and I didn't pray it up, just good spirit? And I thought about it, and I said, that's Carol talking negative. So that next day I went to work, I said, now, Carol, I'm going to ask you how you feel. If you don't feel good, don't tell me. See what I mean? Because, see, I had to pump myself up feeling good, and see, got there, and she's talking that negative talk. Oh, 3 days before payday. Oh, it's the beginning of the week, and we got to say, I don't let nobody rain on my parade today. I don't do it. I want to feel good. Now, if it comes down to me feeling good, or you feeling good, I want both of us to feel good. But if anybody going to feel bad, let it be you. I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to. Spent my whole life doing that, feeling bad, putting everything down. I couldn't join nothing, so I was against everything, absolutely against everything. I don't want to be that. See, I want to look past. When I look at you, look to that human thing in you. I ain't talking about what's restricted to the program. You know, we get pretty lofty when we get here. We can't identify if there ain't no alcoholic. You know what I mean? That's a bunch of crap. See, let me tell you something. I took 34 years time out and ripped off the world. I didn't contribute nothing. And them people that was contributing wasn't alcoholics. They the ones that held the world up. And how dare I not try to identify with them as fellow human beings. I joined the human race. After I come to AA, AA has broadened my life. I am a member of the human race today. I never was before. I'm a member of the community. You know, we try to be, I don't want to be different. I don't want to be different, like I can't identify with nobody. Like, there's a lot of Al-Anons here today, you know. And I was reading, bought that little 25-cent pamphlet out there in the lobby, and I was reading that, and I've been blessed to go to Founders Day every year since 76. And I see Lois, Bill Wilson's wife, every year, have over there. And I was thinking about that. You know, I reduce everything to money. And I'm thinking, you know what? Lois is the one that had that job. Lois is the one that paid that rent. She's the one that helped them drunks, and she bought that coffee to straighten them drunks up with. If it weren't for them Al-Anons, it might not be no AA. You know? So I dare we try to say, because she paid the rent, there wouldn't have been no place to have them drunks shake off them drunks. You see what I mean? And we can't afford to be better and different. I don't want that. I don't want that. See? Because God ain't impressed with that stuff. He ain't impressed. And I'm going to pat myself on the back. I'm over here doing such a good job, and I'm doing better than Susie over there. That's a bunch of crap. He don't care nothing about that. He loves me. I am so glad to know that I ain't waiting. I'm going to be all right after I get this, and after I get that, and after I get that. I'm all right right now. I'm a winner today because I'm sober. See, and when we start putting ourselves down, what we got to think about is, where were we? When? See, we forget that stuff. I don't ever want to forget how sick, sad, and sorrowful I was. I don't want to forget that. I'm okay today. I am happy today. Three demons, they had happiness. One said, they wanted to know what to do with it. One said, well, we're going to hide it at the bottom of the ocean. Man will never think to look for it there. They thought about it. Well, man's pretty ingenious. He'll one day find it. I know, we'll hide it in the crevice of a rock, way up on a high mountain. Man will never think to look for it there. They thought about it. Well, man's pretty ingenious. One day he'll find it, you know. The head demon said, I know what we'll do. We'll put it in the hearts of man because he'll never think to look for it there. And we look every place for happiness. And we got it. We got it all. We got it all. All we got to do is accept that we're okay today. See, I am like a piece of coal on the way to diamond. You got to take the hammer. This is what God did, and chipped and chipped, and you put the coal in the fire and all that process that it goes through. And underneath that, and you press it and press it, and that's my life. And in there is a beautiful diamond. And that's me. I can stand up here and tell you that because I know it. And I know it because God ain't finished with me yet. I don't have to kick my butt no more. Life has done that. It's done that. I'm sick of that. I don't want that no more. I'm a winner today. And you know how I know it? Because I look in the mirror every day of my life when I'm brushing my teeth and say, you winner, you're a fox. Every day, every day, every day. That's right. See, I come to the meeting to get strokes, and if y'all don't give them to me, I'll go give them to myself. Because that's the name of the game. I ain't on my knees no more. I had an 11-foot cotton sack that I put every failure in, every mistake, every wrong thing I ever did in my life, and I put it on my shoulder every day for 34 years and carried it. I ain't carrying it no more. I'm a child of God, sober by the grace of God, and I'm going to let the world know it. Thank you.